Episode 119 of Corporate Lunch, America's first line of defense against awkward outfits and bad attitudes. And it's GQ's podcast about clothes. I'm Noah, and Sam and Rachel are my partners in this thing. Hi, guys.
Good morning. Good
morning. Two-thirds of us are wearing hats this morning. I'll let you guys guess who isn't wearing a hat, but it's actually the one who has probably the worst bedhead.
I did not have time to shower. My hair and makeup team was late. They got stuck in traffic. They can't find parking. So
big inauguration this week. Congratulations to all the winners of the elections who are now holding office and to the American people. And I just want to say I was kind of observing the inauguration and found that I must be a complete degenerate, and everyone I know must be a complete degenerate, because all anyone talked about was the clothes and the mittens and the Prada and the Ralph and otherwise basically the fits.
Can you guys explain to me why is the Bernie meme funny? I don't understand the joke.
Because you can put him anywhere. There are so many different places to sit. You know, now what sort of jumpstarted the meme was there was like a weird like undercurrent of people on Twitter who were like mad that he didn't get dressed for the inauguration. Like everyone was sort of like, and Joe's in Ralph and Ella's in Miu Miu and this guy's, you know, wore his Dior Jordans. Like, that's cool. And then everyone's like, what's Bernie wearing? Oh, the same like Burton jacket from that meme, like not a top coat, right? Like, I think there's this idea that you're supposed to like get, you know, dress in like formal attire, and oh, he's got these cool mittens on. Where are those from? And someone sort of, I guess, had already interviewed him about his mittens on the campaign trail when he was running for the Democratic nomination, and you know, it was like made by this by some teacher in Vermont who gifted them to him, and I don't know. I don't know how. There was clearly a lot of like fascination with the outfit. And then I just think the pose of him like looking kind of cold and like annoyed just sort of created just like snowballed that moment into sort of like an iconic meme.
It just seemed really sad to me that most people's reaction to the inauguration, when they've spent the past year being like, I'm so miserable, I'm in the worst like state of my life emotionally, their reaction is like, what's the like equivalent of Chrissy Teigen making that ooh face at the yeah. Golden Globes in like 2014 or whatever.
Right. Going from being like Donald Trump is an existential threat to like me and like our country and our democracy. And then when it's finally over, it's like, damn, hold on. Who knows Photoshop? Like, could someone put Bernie on this like album cover for me? Thanks.
I did read this story this morning that the woman who made the mittens is like incredibly overwhelmed and distressed by the response. So at first she was, I mean, you have to think like, you know, with Ralph doing, you know, Joe Biden's suit, and with, you know, Christopher John Rogers doing Kamala's like amazing coat and her dress. In those instances, the designers are prepared for an overwhelming display of like support and interest in their products. But the woman who made these mittens said, she told the Jewish Insider, she's received like 6,000 emails. And she's like, I don't have 6,000 mittens. There's no way I can make 6,000 mittens because they're upcycled.
I made a joke last night that she was going to become a Republican because she was going to make all this money from selling these mittens and be like, man, God, these taxes are just absolutely killer. And it turns out that she actually like someone quoted her. I think it was maybe in that story. I don't have much of a mitten business anymore because it really wasn't worth it. Independent crafters get really taken for a ride by the federal government. We get taxed to the nth degree and it wasn't really worth it.
So what does she do now?
I mean, I think her full-time job is teaching.
Oh, right. She's a teacher. Just seems to me like a lot of people have never met an old man from the Northeast before. And that like everything Bernie does in terms of like what he wears and how he presents himself is like so in line with his ideology, which we're all familiar with, that there's like nothing surprising or shocking whatsoever about it. Also, it wasn't he's just there as like a homie, you know. He wasn't the star of the show.
I don't know. We might need, it sounds like we might need a independent craft artisanal stimulus or something.
Yeah, I do hope that Biden starts to really show some love to the artisanal craft movement as it relates to my interest specifically.
It was definitely pretty strange that like when everyone was talking about the clothes and the outfits and the designers as the inauguration was happening, I sort of just thought it was like my, like how I'd curated my timeline and who I follow and, you know, the interests that the algorithm presents to me. But like actually like every like viral moment, every trending topic, everything that anyone wanted to talk about, even on like, you know, on NPR or CNN or whatever, was what people were wearing, which I think is like as strong an argument for like just everyone's desire for like a return to like boring normalcy as anything.
You're saying that the attention to that was reflecting people wanting to pay attention to kind of like the mundane aspects of the event?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not a fashion person who's sort of tuned into that anyway, like, and you know, something is kind of boring, like, what do you like, you know, the Grammys or the Oscars, it's like kind of a snooze fest. What do you want to talk about? It's the clothes, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, I think it's a couple things. I think it's one, like we've all sort of been trained to like observe these live events, especially those of us on Twitter, which is kind of what we're talking about, it with this like heightened observational power, like award shows and things like that. I mean, primarily where you're like really trying to decode what everyone's wearing and doing and like what message they're sending or what the credit is or like where the viral moment is and what's your entry point. And then I think the other thing is actually kind of the opposite of what you're saying to some extent, Sam, which is like Trump really trained us to, like, we were hyper focused on what him and his crazy wife were wearing and everyone, all of his like cabinet, like there was a lot of like messaging and a lot of chatter about every, you know, his hair or the color of his skin or the way his pants fit or whatever.
Appearances.
Appearances. Thank you. That's the word. So I do think that, I don't know that that existed, like, you know, the Obama era was different in so many ways, but I think that our obsession with appearances in this particular way as like news moments and as viral moments is like a Trump era. It really took off then. It really, like, that was a golden.
We did have to live through Tan Suit Gate during Obama's
yeah, tenure. There were a couple little ones. Yeah, for sure.
But the thing that is interesting about, or that I was thinking a lot about, Noah, that sort of dovetails with what you're saying, is that I think like if you're a fashion observer or an appreciator or a journalist or a critic, part of your job should be to pick apart why people are wearing what they're wearing. But it shouldn't just be taking at face value the message that they're trying to give you. Your job is to interrogate whether that message works or fails.
Yeah.
And I found it really striking that people were so eager to just accept the messaging that was being put across and sort of patting themselves and the wearers and the designers on the back for creating this messaging.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, if you look back at Michelle Obama at, I think it was the 2013 inauguration where she wore Tom Brown, which was like that gray coat and she had purple gloves. She just looked great. There, like that, and that was the end of it. She just looked great. She looked regal, but democratic. I mean, she just looked fabulous.
Yeah.
And there was nothing more to it. And I actually really just appreciate that kind of like, my job is to look like a powerful representation of what this country is about and to look good for this event where I'm going to be on television for like 12 hours.
Yeah.
Rather than like, I'm going to wear this color to say this thing that suggests this and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's like, I'm like, you've lost me. And also, like, what am I getting out of this other than like your stylist talk to someone who like knows a history of a color. And I don't know, maybe I'm being like way too cynical about it, but that was my.
But I think that's why Ella Emhoff really stole the show, because she was just like, I want to look cool. She wore a Miu Miu coat from the fall collection, right? Miu Miu, you know, obviously not an American brand, not designed by an American. Like, most of the attendees wore American designers or wore colors that were meant to signify, you know, a sort of a, like an alignment with the suffragist movement or something like that. But Ella sort of took the Michelle Obama and Tom Brown approach, which was like, I'm going to be on TV. I want to look cool and I want to be warm. And, you know, I think she's also like a fashion person, you know, as a student at Parsons, and like probably kind of knew that like wearing Miu Miu would get the people going, right?
Mm-hmm. The same with Amanda Gorman. I mean, I clocked her right away in that yellow coat and I was like, who is that? She looks amazing. Like, she looks better than anyone else.
Mm-hmm. And that
what
was Prada.
What would you guys wear if you were as the child of president or vice president at the inauguration? What would you wear?
I would wear the thigh high Rick Owens Kiss boots and like the white tidy whitey cod piece and like a big shouldered coat.
Yeah. So Rick fall 21, fall winter 21.
Rick fall 21 all the way.
Yeah. It would be sick too, because the Rick Owens show is like the next day or the same day or something. So it would be, someone really should have, since the men's shows aren't really happening now, like someone should have hit up Virgil and been like, look, I'm going to be at the inauguration. Like, your show's going to be 2 days later. We should really, there could be some synergy here. Someone like could show up in this Chicago jacket.
Just like knocking shit over. Like,
I want Vuitton to like take commission so I could get like one of those jackets made, but it's just Troy, New York, like the, the city I'm from. It's just a bunch of crappy ass buildings.
And then there's like a skate bowl like on the shoulder.
Yeah. They should do that. I mean,
what's like the Eiffel Tower of Troy?
The Collar City Bridge probably is a big one. So what did you guys think of the Vuitton fall winter 2021 collection just presented in video form, featuring Saul Williams, Mos Def, and other performers and poets, live streamed on platforms worldwide? Virgil Abloh's sixth collection as the creative head of Vuitton Men's. And we had a little chat with Will last night, and I shouldn't say that Will said this, but he did say it, that Virgil was really showing his age with this one, which only because Mos Def and Saul Williams are very late 90s. Me and Will and Virgil are all roughly the same age-ish and grew up probably listening to like Lyricist Lounge and these like underground hip hop mixtapes that always featured like Saul Williams and Mos Def. It's a very late 90s thing for a certain type of American into like rap and skateboarding and graffiti and stuff. So although I didn't, that's not to say that I felt like the thing felt dated. I thought the video was actually extremely cool. And
yeah, the video is really cool.
Like, I don't know, is it 13, 15 minutes long or something? And like pretty compelling and easy to watch and like really beautiful and well choreographed. And some of it I thought was a little stiff, or I didn't, you know, I hate like a bunch of models standing around in a marble room. Like, I don't need to see that, but there was just so much movement and cool energy and you really got to see the clothes. I don't know. I feel like he kind of nailed it for the format.
I'm a slides guy, but I enjoyed that video actually.
I'm a slides guy too. I mostly skip the videos, but this one felt,
there was also something, I mean, last season when he had the show over the summer, which I believe was in Shanghai, Lauryn Hill technically performed. And so I was, which I don't know if he promoted that to get us really excited to watch the video, or if it was like, okay, Lauren, I've said you're performing, so now you have to actually perform. But I was like, so when I was watching the video, and Steph from Vogue Runway and I have been live tweeting. So we're live tweeting and then texting each other about the shows. And we were like, is that Mos Def? That's so cool. Because usually if you have someone who's that famous, you're going to be like, and Mos Def is performing. Yeah. But the fact that he just casually drops like Saul Williams and Mos Def into his video is incredibly cool.
So there was, I didn't realize that there was no promotion that announced or promised Yasiin Bey.
So I have a theory about Off-White, or not about Off-White, but about Virgil Abloh, especially at Vuitton, which I want to discuss with you guys, which is that he packs all of his shows with like way too many references, right? I think we can all agree on that. And I think a lot of times people criticize him for this like over-referential show where you like can hardly navigate through like what is inspiring what, and he's like, you know, kind of twisting things that other designers have done, and he said that this is a very conscious thing, it's like he's not copying them. And I've been kind of wondering recently if this is actually just what the project is, and the whole idea is that like he's just learning about these things, and as he's learning about whatever he's learning about at this like hyper pace, he's just putting it all, like, this is just the stuff I've been thinking about over the past 2 months or 3 months. And the idea is that like people who are maybe 15 or 20, 25 years younger than him are looking at these shows and like that they just like dip into whatever it is that they find interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Virgil has long said that like his, a big part of his project is, you know, educational in nature. Like he wants some kid who maybe grows up in like a suburb somewhere to be able to like access like deep culture through his shows or through his performances or through his art, which can definitely make for a pretty chaotic men's fashion collection sometimes. But I think that's a pretty smart take.
In a way, he's like doing exactly what you want someone with the in his position with those resources to do, which is just like introduce a lot of different ideas and experiment. And like, you know, it's cool that Vuitton like is as weird as it is with Virgil doing it, that there are as many ideas as there are. You know, sometimes you see a fashion, like a great fashion collection from a great, well-resourced designer that's just a little boring. And you feel kind of like, well, what was the point of that? Even if it's, you know, beautiful. But there's something about, I mean, Virgil is so didactic. Like it, sometimes you're like, there's all this kind of symbolism and meaning and references and all these layers, but all they really amount to is the idea of symbolism and meaning and layers. Like sometimes I feel like you just want to get to the really point, like to the point, and be, it's like, what does Virgil really believe? What really is his worldview? What does he really want us to know? And not just messaging to us that he is telling us and teaching us things, but what really are the ideas that drive it? There's like I was reading the Vogue review. Who did this? Sarah Moer, probably. Mm-hmm. Like he does this a lot, but there's a quote where he says, fashion has the power to deprogram these dress codes and impact possibilities. And I just think, sure, but to what end? Like, that's how I feel about it. And I like this collection. I think it looks super cool. Like, I mean, who's the stylist he's working with? Ibrahim, the guy that just took
Kamara.
Yeah, Ibn Kamara. Is like incredible. Is this the first time he styled the Virgil show?
He did Off-White. Yeah.
So they've been working together for
probably
a while.
6 or 7 months at this point.
Well, I think they're like a great, they work very well together. Anyway, that's kind of my rant. I like the collection, but I do feel, I know what you're saying, Rachel, about this is the project, but then I feel like it still leaves me craving a little something, which is like, okay, but what do you really want us to know? Like,
but I wonder if this, and I completely agree with you, but I feel like that's kind of the point for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't make clothing in a way where he's like, Steph pointed out that he did the show in the tennis club in Paris, which is where Phoebe Philo used to do all the Celine shows. No. And I don't think there's, which is interesting, but I don't think there's any meaning to that other than he just worships and adores Phoebe Philo and wants to just occupy the same space, both mentally and physically, as she did.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's kind of cool. Also could just be a practical, like some, you know, you need a certain amount of square footage and you have X dollars and what's available. And that's just one of the places, you know, sometimes venues are just what they are, but I'm sure there was.
Yeah, but you know, he's obsessed with Phoebe Philo.
I hope it means that he's also obsessed with tennis.
Virgil is?
That'd be great. I don't know.
Oh, I meant to ask you guys about, did you guys both go to the Honor Titus show last night?
Yeah.
We did.
Was it a great time and a beautiful night without me?
It was amazing.
Yeah. We saw these three kids, Noah, that were, I mean, these kids were, it felt like they were there for you. They were probably like 21, 22 years old. One was dressed exactly as Christian Slater in Heathers. One was dressed as like a Bret Easton Ellis, like Sean Pablo villain character. And he had round sunglasses on the tip of his nose. And then the other was dressed as like Ferris Bueller's really cool and beautiful girlfriend. It was insane. I just like, they were, and then when they walked in, they kind of like looked at me and Sam and Will and Lloyd and were like, like we were passing each other in the hallway and it was very Breakfast Club.
Did Sam, I'm surprised Sam didn't know them or that they didn't like ask Sam for an autograph or something. Or was this a different?
No, never seen them before, but I was into the vibe. The kid in the sort of doing the sort of American Psycho thing had like slicked back hair and was just like drinking Jack Daniels from a bottle that he had like picked up at the bodega on the corner.
We're supposed to be in a time of like no FOMO, you know, but you guys are killing me.
So a lot of people are saying that this Vuitton collection, the sort of chatter that I think Rachel and I picked up on the internet was that this was a career defining collection and Virgil's best. Agree, disagree?
I like it. I don't see how it's significantly different from his past collections, if that makes sense, which I also think have been pretty good, but.
Yeah, I brought this up yesterday, but I think far and away his best collection so far has been his first one, where the models just had this it just total like comfortable, casual elegance. It was like, you know, the silhouettes were very skateboarder, but rendered in this really beautiful, light, delicate, luxurious Vuitton fabric. The sneakers were cool. You know, it was just had this like, it was just this sort of this vibe that like you really just want that from Virgil, right? And there are definitely some joints in this collection. And I love the cowboy energy sort of towards the end, but I do think that as Virgil does a little bit more tailoring, like the sort of feeling of the collections have gotten a little bit more awkward. Like the models just don't look like super comfortable in the clothing.
I like that smashed hat that appeared a lot that Saul is wearing and appears elsewhere. I do think that first collection was really kind of amazing and the most memorable. I don't know if it was his best, but it's, you know, it was his first, it was this debut and it was kind of momentous. And
should we move on to Rick?
Well, I mean, Rick Owens has a much longer career and has had many, many more collections, but this is one of the best Rick Owens collections I can remember seeing.
Me too. Yeah, totally.
And just like so like inventive, so like just I feel like it was soundly a Rick collection. A lot of like his like staple, you know, exaggerated proportions and drape and all that stuff was in there, and the textures, the hides and the zippers. I don't know, I just don't know of another designer at that level who is that like creative, which is such a, even that word feels like too basic, but just truly like every collection really feels like so original, and he's really like creating something sort of essential and new, and insanely cool and horny as hell. I thought this was Rick, very horny Rick, whereas like Rick is always a little like kinky. Yeah. And like, I mean, Rick is extremely kinky. He famously was the video where someone's like peeing on him. And, but this one felt like really horny in this more like sensual kind of way that some of the, it's not always in the other, in his collections.
I thought, well, one thing I love about Rick Owens is that he designs without any sense of morality, or I should say like moral judgment, which a lot of designers do, especially now. They really want to present this like ideal proposition of masculinity or manhood, or like, here's what a man should be today. Whereas like Rick just reflects what he is seeing. And I can't really think of any other fashion designer in menswear who does that. And I think for me, the genius of this collection was that it was about male aggression, and specifically seemed to be about white male aggression and this like suppressed anger, which no other designer has dared to touch, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. Because it's something, I mean, a lot of artists like Jordan Wolfson is someone obviously who like comes to mind in the art world who explores these kinds of themes and also embodies them. And I think he did, like, he knows that he explores and embodies those themes. And I think he like confronted them in a way that I haven't seen him confront or any other designer confront that in their work before. And I, especially in this like middle part of the show where it seemed to just be a Jack Dorsey chapter.
Yeah.
Which was just, I mean, you know, a lot of designers have quote unquote problematic customers or fans. And I would say the Jack Dorsey, Rick Owens relationship is probably the epitome of that sort of challenge in the fashion world, is that you have this person who really loves and supports your work, but a lot of the other people who love and support your work find this person troubling, problematic. They have too much power, they have too much money, too much control. And he just seemed to plant this section in the middle of the show that's exactly what Jack Dorsey wears from his collection. And it was like the first part of the show seemed to be these really sexy, provocative kind of, I'm in a weird nightclub underground, you know, in Europe somewhere. And then this Jack Dorsey section. And then the end where like everyone's wearing these big blazers and it's like evil, like Armani guys on from the 80s on steroids. So it's like all these different kinds of visions of problematic white male masculinity.
It's an interesting point. I mean, fashion, you know, being a commercial endeavor kind of purports to be conceptually open and free and boundary pushing, but ends up being extremely conventional, right? And very, very reluctant to challenge, especially socio-political ideas in any way, or to propose or to like explore, interrogate ideas that would be controversial or somehow, I don't know, would like take a deeper level of like understanding and patience. And you just feel that Rick just doesn't feel bound to that, to those concerns, partly because his business isn't, and he knows that. And cause he's sort of a genius, and geniuses just do what they do. But you know what I mean? Like we get, you know, we dive into these collections, like looking for like these big ideas and this like creative freedom. But like, we all know at the end of the day, we're not fully getting that because we're mostly because of commercial concerns and because of, it's not like Rick Owens is going to get canceled for this collection. And I don't think that what you're saying about white male aggression is even in that is cancelable, let's say, but it is certainly, taking on a topic that others just wouldn't for various reasons.
Yeah, it's a taboo.
Interestingly, it's also one of the rare collections that I've seen so far that acknowledges the reality of the pandemic. All the models were wearing masks.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Beautiful sort of scary masks with like long sort of like trailing fabric sort of fluttering in the wind. I mean, masks are, you know, Rick's aesthetic is such that masks really do fit within his universe in like a pretty seamless way. Like, you know, not many brands can do that. Like, you know, Rick Owens, Acronym comes to mind, but you know, like Vuitton and Dior, those the collections seem to be about like, or like made for a sort of imagined post COVID world. And Rick seems to be saying, well, in 6 months when this comes out, sorry, but you're going to need to buy Rick Owens mask.
Yeah. It's remains surprising that there aren't more masks in these shows. Even if there was just like one here or there or something, it's just kind of strange that there's no acknowledgement. And I thought the Rick masks were, it was like a designed mask. It wasn't like a mask in a Rick fabric. It was like it had this like drape and like a cut to it.
Yeah. So sick. Rick was wearing one backstage too.
It kind of, it reminded me of like going to the opera where like at the end of every opera, the woman who you're sort of rooting for dies of a mysterious illness, quote unquote, which is usually tuberculosis, but the whole time like she's becoming more and more beautiful like as she's dying. I feel like that's enough, like Rick sort of gets that like, oh yeah, like it's a mask which is actually quite elegant and kind of has this windswept romanticism even as it's incredibly dystopian.
So what's going on with this Dior show? It's very militant, huh?
Mm-hmm. I thought that was a cool silhouette. I liked that shrunken standing collar jacket with the military sort of details and then the more blousy pants.
Yeah. And then there's like the camo, all these different types of like officer jackets, which I don't know the names of, but with the sort of like short stand collar and lots of buttons down the front and lots of hardware, sort of medals and badges. And
Kim Jones once again proves that he's, the king of the mohair sweater.
Yeah.
You know, no matter where he is or what season it is, Kim Jones can just do such a fucking fire mohair sweater.
Sam, I was looking at, so for this collection, he collaborated with Peter Doig, who's a super famous Scottish painter. And I was looking at some old paintings of his, and there are actually guys in these incredible like novelty knits in the painting. You kind of wonder,
translated
like,
into real.
Yeah.
Well, there's one that basically is like is directly lifted from one of the paintings, right? That sort of yellow and red and black one. Yeah, so cool.
Well, Kim is a big like fashion collector and archivist, and of course, Vivienne Westwood early in her career really did a lot of mohair sweaters that were worn by Johnny Rotten and Malcolm McLaren and others. And I think Kim's always, he made Vuitton sweaters that were just like versions of that. Mohair sweaters at Vuitton that were versions of the old Vivienne Westwood sweaters.
Great hats in the collection too. Like the knit or the crocheted skull cap was almost certainly not going to be produced, but something very compelling about that, about the white one at the end, especially.
I liked the leather head harness.
Yeah, that kind of freaked me out. That looks like a helmet that you put on a baby when it's like head is not growing like proportionally. Did you guys clock Kim wearing the zip up Prada shirt at the end when he came out to take his bow in the video?
Oh no, they don't have a bow shot on Vogue Runway.
It's in the video. You have to watch at the very end. Prada shirt, not sure what the trousers are, and then Sakai Nike waffle knit sneakers. All black, obviously.
I think he was wearing Prada at the Fendi show as well.
Wow.
When he went to the Fendi men's show. Who loves Prada more, Noah or Kim Jones?
I mean, Kim probably owns more Prada than me. Probably Kim. I'll give it to Kim.
Who loves art more, Noah or Kim Jones?
Art? Is that what you said? Who loves Air Jordans more, Kim Jones or Michael Jordan? That was a very funny inauguration moment, right? It was just like headlines that were just like, some guy wore Dior Jordans to the inauguration. And it's just like, I guess people eventually figured out who it was, like Kamala Harris's niece's husband or something. Mm-hmm. But It's just some guy wore these sneakers to this thing. I think we all got to get our goddamn brains out of the fit gutters.
Wait, you never answered your own question at the beginning of the episode. What would you wear to the inauguration if I become president and I invite you?
And maybe there's a great tradition of Tom Brown at inaugurations happening. So that would be, if I felt like, I think the first thought would be like, I should wear an American designer. And then I'd call Evan Connory and I'd be like, yo, make me a suit. And he'd be like, no. And then I'd call Tom Brown and they'd be like, no, but you can go buy one at the store. And I would probably do that. No skirt. But I would try to get the thing that I always talk about, which is like the loose cut Tom Brown. Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't shop Tom Brown, so I don't like know the cuts and silhouettes and names and stuff, but I've seen it worn in like a kind of loose, oversized way that I'm just obsessed with. I specifically saw it on the guy who was the manager of the Tom Brown store in Japan, I think in Oyama, Tokyo or something. It's an amazing store. And there's the coolest old man who's the manager and he wears like loose fit Tom Brown and looks awesome. So anyway, that's what I would, maybe I would call the Japan store, you know.
I think that's a great answer.
All right, thank
you. I was thinking earlier this week how it would just be a completely different brand if his name was Kevin Connory. Like if he's Kevin Connory, that's it, Kiff.
Yeah, Evan Connory I mean, I've talked to Evan about that a lot. He has a really good name. He's very lucky. And one might consider that his name has helped him with some success in Japan. It sounds like a Japanese name. And he kills it in Japan. But Kevin...
That's like how everyone...
My nickname for him is actually Kevin Cannoli.
Kevin Cannoli has like a half floor installation at Dover Street Market.
Yeah. I take it back that he would probably make me a suit. Maybe I would use there. Maybe there's like an inaugural like wardrobe budget that I could pull from, you know what I mean? To like develop it with him.
The federal coffers.
Rachel, what would you wear?
I would wear Tom Brown.
Everybody's on team Tom Brown.
Yeah. I would wear Tom Brown too, or maybe Bodie.
Oh yeah, you gotta wear Bodie. That would be tight. Hell yeah. All right, 4 years, you'll see us up there. The stepchildren.
When President Will Welch is inaugurated.
That's right. That's right. I mean, hey, the way things are going doesn't seem too far-fetched. Yeah, I mean, and hey, every week I ask you to enter to fill Sam Hyens' DMs with yourself, but maybe shoot Will a DM and say, hey, come back on the pod. I mean, we need to get some momentum behind it and have some people remind him that his voice is cherished and needed here. But also still DM Sam Hyens, tell him what you're going to wear to the inauguration when you're invited because your stepmom is the vice president. And, episode 119 of Corporate Lunch. This has been a pleasure as always. We thank you for listening and subscribing and telling friends, offering friends the gift of a podcast recommendation. Maybe friends who like Fitz but don't like haven't yet listened to talk about Fitz but would want to do that. I think we'd be the podcast for them. So tell them, remind them to subscribe and write reviews and then tell other friends and we can, you know, we'll get more merch going. The Corporate Lunch hat is still for sale. There's a few left, actually.
It is almost sold out. So if you want one, I swear to you, do not sleep.
And that's the end of this episode.